Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you have just joined us, welcome to Radio Islam International and welcome to the program Socially Speaking. I'm your host, Sister Zeenat. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The time right now is 11 minutes past 10. Well, we commence this very hot but beautiful Monday morning with Monday Morning Focus. And today, inshallah, we focus on something important, teaching children kindness. Or, you know, just making kindness a habit in your home. We'll be looking at some, just some random acts of kindness for kids that could actually help them recognize opportunities to show kindness later in life, inshallah. So that's for our program, Monday Morning Focus. A little later, of course, we'll be speaking to Sister Anisa from the Islamic Care Line in Johannesburg. She's a counselor there. And today we're talking about something very important. It's called the First Wives Support Group. And hopefully we'll be touching or focusing on the concerns and the feelings of being a first wife and even a second wife and the purpose of these support groups, inshallah. So that's coming up a little later in the program. So for now, teaching children kindness. Well, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, it's very easy to get caught up teaching your child how to write his letters, you know, his ABCs, his 1, 2, 3s, his alif bata, how to use a spoon, how to use a knife. But we sometimes tend to forget to teach our children to be kind. Now, some parents worry that teaching kindness could actually cause a child to lose his edge in today's competitive world. You know, they feel that, you know, if you teach them too much of kindness, they become a little weak in this world. But no, teaching kindness is valuable. Research says that teaching kindness has a positive influence on, you know, on a range of academic, on health and social outcomes for your kids. When children, or rather when kindness is taught in school, for that matter, children experience increased self-esteem, increased motivation to learn, improved attendance, and decreased bullying and violence. And, you know, these things are becoming so rife in our schools, where young children would be ending up bullying other children in school. So, and there's so much of violence in our schools these years. We hear about it all the time. So maybe just teaching your child to be a little kind can actually help them, or, you know, just help them not be any of these children. Studies also show kids who engage in random acts of kindness are more likely to be accepted by their peers. Their good deeds improve their well-being and help them develop positive perceptions of their world. But research also suggests children today are more self-absorbed and they are less empathetic than they were a decade ago. So you don't expect your child to learn kindness by observing his peers or maybe from others for that matter. Perform acts of kindness with your child to teach her or him how to be generous, how to be compassionate, and how to be giving. So you need to be part of that. You need to teach your children this. If you do it, your children will do it too. If you are an example to them, inshallah, they will learn from these examples. Of course, your child's acts of kindness may not be able to do or may not be all that random since she or he most likely needs some assistance from you. But teaching her or him to do nice things for other people now could be the key to helping her recognize or him recognize, you know, opportunities to show kindness later in life. So if you teach your child now, you know, do these things when they are young, it'll help them, inshallah, later in life to have these qualities within them, inshallah. Now, let's just go through some of the acts of kindness that we can actually teach our children as parents. We can do it with them, you know, together with them, and inshallah, they learn from what they see. That's so important, you know. It's no use telling a child to do something and you don't do it. You need to do it so that they can see you do it and learn from there, inshallah. Okay, some very simple things that you can do to teach our children acts of kindness is, like, the first one is donate items to people in need. It's nice to get kids involved in fundraising, but sometimes fundraisers are too abstract. They don't fully grasp the concept of, you know, how they are raising money for or how the money is being used. So that's a little bit of a problem. So it's better to get them directly involved in donating items. You know, that makes a difference. And here are a few ways that you can encourage your child to donate items to people in need. First of all, you need to, maybe if you have the time, if you have the space, you know, plant a vegetable garden. Now, this is not only good for yourself, for your home. You know, we are so encouraged these days to eat fresh vegetables, fresh fruit. So if you can actually do that, you know, plant a little vegetable garden in your backyard, and you can do it in so many different ways. You don't have to have a very big space to do this, but you can do it in many different ways. So plant a little vegetable garden and, you know, just assign regular duties to your child. Get your child involved. For example, watering the plants, pulling the weeds, harvesting the vegetables. Then give the vegetables to other people. Now, you know, if you're living on a farm, alhamdulillah, I know we have family living on the farm, and most of our vegetables, you know, like our Indian vegetables especially, comes from the farm, and they're absolutely divine, fresh from the farm. So, you know, get them involved and let them then give these vegetables that have been harvested, you know, give them to other people. Gather gently used toys and donate them to an orphanage, homeless shelter, or domestic violence shelter. Also encourage your child to pick out which toys he or she no longer needs. Talk to your child about where the toys are going and let him pick out which toys he's willing to donate. So, you know, this is so important. Our children, you know, we have so many, we buy so many toys for them. And what do they do with these toys most of the time? They just end up breaking them and throwing them around, and you'll find them lying around the whole yard. What you can do is make, you know, get with them, get together with them, and then decide with them which toys you can actually give away to the poor or to whoever else needs them. So help your child identify clothes that he can donate to other children. Another thing, it's theirs. Remember, don't just take it and give it away. You may actually hurt their feelings if you just take away something that they really like. So ask them this, you know, from your clothes. You take out what you don't want and what you want to give away to somebody else. Definitely give him some, you know, some say over which items he wants to donate. Also, you can make a meal and deliver it to the elderly neighbor, maybe a relative or a friend. You know, cook something nice and ask them to take it to the neighbor, to the granny next door, to, you know, your neighbors next door, or anybody that they would like to give it to. Donate gently used books to the library or a charity. Again, you know, we tend to buy lots of books for our children. Of course, we actually shouldn't be doing that. Instead, we should be, you know, going to a library and allowing them to take books from the library and read, and then return them to the library. That is a better way. But if you do have a lot of books at home, then try and donate it to a library or maybe a charity. You know, another thing that I like to do, that I really like, and I think it's such a nice little gesture, is to write thank you notes. How many of us do this these days? They say thank you notes don't have to involve forcing your kids to write letters to everyone after they've received gifts, for example. Instead, you know, just teach your child there are always people who can be thanked outside of holidays. So you don't only say thank you to them because you're going on a holiday and you had a nice time and, you know, just during the holiday times. Now, you can help your child write a thank you notes to people he appreciates. And who would that be? You know, I'll tell you a little while. In a while, he can also draw little pictures for his daddy or nani or dada or daddy, or give a special card to your, you know, your domestic worker, the one that is there for you all the time, doing all your chores. Maybe some caretaker, the one taking care of you, your school teacher. It's coming to the end of the year, and I know many people actually give their teachers little gifts. So let your child choose a gift and give it, or write a little note in this case, write a little thank you note, or maybe your family friend, you know, anybody that helps you in some way or the other. Also create special notes for other people who assist your family, for example, such as, you know, the person who cuts your child's hair, or, you know, the doctor for that matter, and, you know, somebody that comes in to do little chores for you at home. Also write letters to thank the police officers or firefighters or in your community for the work that they do. Also maybe the security guards. We have security guards everywhere. Write a little thank you note to them. It'll make them feel so good, and it'll teach your child to be kind to people. Do chores for someone is another important one. You know, just provide acts of service for people who may need a helping hand. When you make it a regular habit to do so, your child will learn to recognize people in need and, of course, opportunities when he can actually pitch in. Just a few of some ways that you can perform chores for others with your child. What you can do is identify a neighbor who could use some help with maybe the yard work. And there's many people out there doing their own gardens and cleaning their own yards. So, you know, go encourage your little one to actually go out there and help. As a family, rake the leaves, cut the grass or the weeds in the garden. Do a little bit of gardening yourself. Help the person that is doing that for you. Also regularly donate some time to help your grandparents, your nani, daddy, dada, daddy, around the house. And you know, now, especially during the month of December, when all of our domestic workers go home, the elder people in the family do need a little bit of help. So please send your little ones out there and tell them, go and help daddy and dada or nani and nana in the kitchen a little, help them clear up the house a little. These are all things of, you know, little acts of kindness. Encourage your child to surprise a sibling by doing one of her chores for her. You don't always get them to do it, but, you know, nobody will do the other one's job. But actually teach your child to help their little brother or sister. If it's something that they need to do, then, you know, teach them to be able to do it for them. Another way is to take care of animals. Children often love doing acts of kindness that involve animals. And there are many people that have little pets at home, so here's a few ways that you can care for animals. You can ask, if you don't have them at home, then ask to volunteer at a local animal shelter. Maybe this, you know, I know you're down the road at Masjid Abrar, they've got a little animal a little shop. So send them there to go in. If you're in this area, of course, send them there to go and help a little. Help with cleaning if you have little pets at home. If you help them clean the area that they, you know, their little shelters. Some shelters may allow kids to assist with simple chores, such as putting away donations or getting food ready for the animals. There's a lot of things that you can do, so actually ask them to go out there and ask, what can I do to help? Then another nice thing to do is to make a gift for someone. Now remember, all of this you need to do so that your child can learn from there. Encourage your child to create small gifts that he can give away to others. Gifts could be simple crafts that she makes or he makes, or pictures that they draw. So when they love doing artwork, so let them do it and then give it to someone that they care for. If, for instance, she earns an allowance, then encourage her to spend her own money on craft items. And just a few ways that children can make gifts for someone else. Okay, rather than encouraging him to write out lengthy wish lists for the holidays, help him or her to create a list of kind acts and homemade gifts that he can give away. Also write down the names of several friends and family members and neighbors on slips of paper. Then you put these papers into a jar and just once a week, you know, draw the name and of one person and work with your child to identify a gift that you can make for this person. Now, these are some things that you can do during the time, during the holidays with your kids. It will keep you occupied. It will keep your kids occupied. And we're always looking for things to do during the holiday season. So here's a few ideas that will, you know, make it easy for you to. Also, yes, give compliments. You know, this is something we need to teach our children. And the way to do it is when you do it. You do it and your children will actually pick up from there. Random acts of kindness can be as simple as saying something nice to someone. Teach your child to make it a habit to offer compliments and, you know, praise other people's efforts. Just a few ways that you can get your child involved in giving compliments. You know, set a goal at the beginning of the day to give away kind words and compliments. Whether your child says, "I like your shoes," to another child at the playground, or, you know, "Your hair looks good today," maybe to her sister, talk about giving compliments to people. It's so important, you know, if you're having a meal, say, you know, tell your mom, "Oh, mom, this was delicious." You know how nice you make your mommy feel because she's taken all this time and effort to cook that delicious meal for you. Just to get a little acknowledgement from you makes her feel good. So that's something kind that you are telling your mom. But then obviously you need to do it so that your child can learn from it. So if you keep on praising them for little things that they do, if they look good, tell them you are looking good. If their hair looks good, tell them, "Oh, wow, your hair looks very good today. Oh, you've got such a lovely shoe." You know, teach them to compliment people. Carry around colored note cards and let your child write small compliments on them to leave for other people. Also leave behind on the table. You know, at the restaurant, I know people like eating out, so just little compliments to your server, you know, the waiter or the waitress that is serving you, or leave a card for the company who takes care of your yard to compliment them on the job that they have actually done. You know, these are little things, but you teach your child these things, alhamdulillah, and you make them turn into better people. Another important thing is to spread cheer. That's the last one that I can do for today, and that is random acts of kindness can include any simple gesture that brightens someone else's day. Now, if you purposely spread cheer on a regular basis, kindness will become like second nature to your child. And just a few ways to get your child involved in showing kindness to others: cut some flowers from your garden, or, you know, if you have a little extra money, just buy some flowers at the store and give them to someone. Visit someone who could use some company, such as an elderly neighbor or someone who may not get out of the house often. Go out there and visit them, especially visiting the sick. That's very important. Volunteer maybe at, an old age home or a nursing home. You know, some homes may actually welcome children visiting with the residents, or you may be able to deliver homemade items to the residents, like pictures that your child has colored. You know, it will make them feel so good. We don't realize, but these little things, take a little picture that a little child has drawn and give it to a granny. You know how important, it may not be looking great to you, but you know, that granny is going to feel so important because your little one has actually made it for her. Alhamdulillah. you know, pack extra drinks and snacks when you go to the playground and offer to share with other children. That's teaching your children to share as well and be kind to others. Choose a different person to give special surprises to each month. And then work with your child to identify kind deeds that you can do for that person. And, you know, just see how long can you keep it a secret and see the difference. Also, another thing that you can do, you can look for opportunities to hold a door for someone or to let someone go in front of you in the line at the store. You know, this is so important. Sometimes you see these long queues. And there's old people or people that are, you know, maybe even in a hurry, genuinely in a hurry to go somewhere, and they're standing there and they really cannot, you know, come to the front. So maybe sometimes, just, you don't have to do it all the time, because I know sometimes everybody's in a hurry. But if you want to teach your child something, then teach your child to give, you know, maybe give your turn to someone else, you know, that needs it more than what you do. Inshallah, you will see the difference. And it's important, I think, for us to be able to teach our children. And it, like we said in the beginning of the program, you need to do it for your children to be able to do it as well. Inshallah. Well, I hope this will be of help to you once again. When we return, inshallah, we're speaking to Sister Anisa from the Islamic Care Line in Johannesburg. We're talking about the First Wives Support Group. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you have just joined us, welcome back to the program Socially Speaking. I'm your host, Sister Zainat. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. If you fear that you cannot act equitably towards orphans, then marry such women as seem good to you. 2 and 3 and 4. But if you fear that you will not do justice between them, then marry only one. This is more proper than, or that you may not deviate from the right course. This comes in chapter four, verse three of the Holy Quran. Now, oftentimes when polygamy becomes a subject of discussion, it is criticized. Polygamy is not an obligated rule. It is a permissible act. The unsurpassed and the most productive of all marriages are, of course, monogamous marriages, that is, one wife. And most Muslims practice monogamy. Polygamy is not recommended or encouraged, but still it is available to be utilized as a solution if people are faced with extraordinary cases or circumstances. Joining me is Sister Anisa from the Islamic Care Line, and we're going to be discussing something very important today, the First Wives Support Group. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Anisa. Jazakallahu khair for joining me today.
Wa alaikum salam, my Sister Zainat, and to all the listeners, and ameen.
Okay, you know, it's not a topic I like to discuss really, but, you know, we have to. It's reality and we have to talk about these things. But can you tell me what are some of the primary reasons that men choose to have second wives in, you know, this day and age?
Okay, so, you know, I know, I'm not going to put you on the spot, you don't have to answer, but when you said it's not a topic that I like to talk about, and it sounds to me like there's a discomfort with that topic from the onset.
Yeah, it is. Actually, it is for me. I don't know about everybody else.
Okay, so there's lots of mixed feelings around the polygamous marriages, right? Mm. And look, men would take second wives for different reasons. One could be that he's not fulfilled or satisfied, let's say, for example, in his first, in his marriage. Secondly, it could be that he meets someone and he realizes that he wants that woman in his life as well. So when we say, you know, polygamous marriage could have something to do with the existing marriage or nothing to do with the existing marriage, but maybe with a new relationship that forms. And we can debate around how legitimate that relationship is, whether it was in the right circumstances, whether intentions are good and all of that. And only the people who partake in a relationship like that can answer that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but, you know, also what I find is, do our men understand you know, they say Islam has established rules of behavior for polygamous marriages. You know, there are rules, obviously, when you don't want to take a second wife. But do you think our man really understand these restrictions or maybe these rules of behavior?
I'm not sure if it's an issue of understanding. I think, you know, we're also highly accountable and we have to be responsible, right? So first of all, we have a responsibility to our Creator and we are answerable to Him and accountable to Him. In the same way, we have a responsibility and level of accountability to the people around us, whether it be our spouses and our children and all of that. So, and I think that when it comes to any kind of decision that anybody takes, not just men or when it's related to a marriage, we have to think about our responsibilities, who they directed towards, how accountable we are, and how does our decisions affect another person. And the same thing would apply for a polygamous marriage. So when a man chooses to marry a second woman, how does it affect her? And I think for me, that's one of the areas of difficulty, is not the fact that whether a man is allowed to or not, but also when I talk about, and it's not with a view to being judgmental, but we also need to do a bit of introspection. It has to do with our spirituality. You know, we tend as Muslims, we tend to make decisions while it serves us right. So, you know, let's say for example, even amongst all the sunnahs that we choose to practice, there's certain we would and certain we wouldn't, and sometimes we're lacking in our fard, but we insist on a sunnah and all of that. But those are all debatable issues. But going back on to my point that I wanted to mention, is that when men choose to take on second wives, I think the important, and I'm not saying that it's a bad thing or it's a good thing. All I'm saying is that when men choose to take on second wives or third wives, that they think carefully about the circumstances and how does it affect them and the people around them. So even in terms of that decision, it's got nothing to do with, and it's not meant to sound judgmental in any way, both on any man or a second or third wife. It has to do, again, like I said, I'm going to emphasize, does he think carefully about the circumstances and how his decision is going to affect everybody concerned?
Mm-hmm. What about us as women? Do we understand what polygamy is all about and, you know, the rules and regulations with regards to that?
I think we tend not, like you said, you know, it's not a topic that you want to discuss, so we tend to avoid it. But when it hit, it happens to cross your path or your life, it's something you tend to learn about or want to learn about because it's an area of interest or because it's affected you directly. And it can be very complicated, and I know, I have to say from the onset, I know that we're so limited with time, so I'm just even going to skip ahead and say that when we talk about this program and we're saying we want to try and promote a support group for first wives, and in no way are we trying to say that first wives need a support group and second wives don't need a support group, or that we are in favor of first wives and we're not in favor of second wives. Mm-hmm. The intention was that we were approached by somebody to do a first wife support group. So if there's anyone who wants to start a support group for second wives, you know, it's something we would look at because people in different circumstances need different kind of support. And each one, maybe a first wife won't be able to put herself in the shoes of a second wife because maybe she doesn't understand it and her intentions might be different, and maybe she may be in need of a mahram, or she may be in financial need, maybe in need of someone to take care of her and her children. So, you know, we're not judging anybody. Mm. All I'm saying is that we were, a first wife support group was initiated by someone, and so we're trying to see if we can get that started, but in no way are we saying that second wives don't have a place and that they don't necessarily need support, because they come with their own set of, let's say for example, concerns and issues and challenges, because I would imagine that it's not easy on either one of the wives. And I also want to add that it's not necessarily easy on the husbands as well, because when he does take on a second wife, you know, and on a lighter note, you know, men will say, oh, women are like this, and we can't live with one woman. And then I laugh and I'll say, but okay, but now you want to take on two, and it's even worse. But what I'm saying is, on a more serious note, there's lots of dynamics that you need to consider. So it may be day-to-day routines. It may be the dynamics of your relationship with your children. It may be that does marrying another woman address the issues in your first marriage. It may be things like developmental stuff, your relationship, at what age are you, how old are your children, what are their needs at the time, how old is the second wife, she may be in a different developmental stage, how old are her children, does she have children, financial considerations, social considerations, like support structures, like in-law dynamics. So remember, when you married once, now you've got one set of in-laws and you've got two sets of in-laws. So, you know, all I'm saying is that even when men take on a second wife, they need to think about lots of things. And it's not necessarily easy on them either.
Yes, definitely.
And also, like I said, you know, my the two messages that I wanted to get across is one, think carefully about the implications of such a decision, and make sure that you, as responsible as possible, that you can be to sustain the relationships as far as possible, and that a support group is open to both first wives and second wives. It's not that we, favoring one or the other. But I think also what I want to focus on, and I know, Zenas, I'm just going through, because I know our program comes to an end just now, and when you ask why a support group, and generally, and I know a few months ago you did a program with Shaira and you covered a little bit about the benefits of support groups, and they meant to provide support to people from people who are in a similar position. So the members there can put themselves in each other's shoes, because they know what it's like, and also by sharing experiences and sharing even coping mechanisms and giving support. And it's facilitated by, so you get two types of support groups. You get what we call a self-help support group, where the person who's facilitating it is also in a similar position, and the support group eventually starts functioning on its own. Or you could get a support group where it runs for a specific number of sessions and it's more structured and we'd cover specific topics. As far as this support group is concerned, we haven't worked out, although we're trying to recruit people, because there's a few ladies that would like to, but to start a support group we would need at least maybe about two or three women to join the support group. And what I then, in a therapeutic context, when we look at polygamous marriages, the one is also, you know, and I think it's so important that people can sit around a table and work out, even if it's the spouses themselves, to work out logistical stuff. So those things that I was telling you about. So how often this, how are we going to do holidays? How are we going to do this? How are we going to do that? So that everybody understands, we're all on the same page, and we all understand that, okay, this is my responsibility to the first wife, this is my responsibility to my second wife, I've equally shared it. So we can facilitate and help with that process in terms of drawing up some kind of an agreement, so it makes it as easy as possible. It's also about being able to set boundaries, so maybe your first wife might be able to say, okay, these are things that I might be able to work around, these are things that I may not be, and those are negotiable issues, and we could then facilitate or meet a process like that. So it doesn't always, and look, it's not easy. Really,
you make
really
it sounds very easy.
I can sit here and say, okay, we look at coping mechanisms and we look at support structures and all of that, but only the people who are in that situation would know on an emotional level the toll that it takes and can take. We can only help to assist that process and help the couples to minimize that. And also, you know, we do premarital counseling as well. So if a man wants to take on a second wife, we don't mind even doing the premarital or the marriage enhancement or the marriage enrichment process, and just see if we can still iron out some of those things. We can even do marital counseling for the existing marriage. So even if, whether he chooses to marry a second wife or not, we can still help to see if we can work out the issues from the first marriage, whether it be a result of his decision or even if it's unrelated to his decision. So there's, you know, we can offer as many services as we can, with not just the support group, but also related and even for the children or for the family as a whole. But I'm hoping that the few minutes we've had on this session gives people an idea of,
you know, what you're planning to do.
Yeah, but dynamics, mm-hmm. the dynamics also in what to take into consideration, but also intervention methods and what is it that we can do.
Okay, you know, I know it's wonderful to know that this can be done, inshallah, but currently, you know, how are all these concerns with regards to polygamous marriages, you know, all the concerns, the problems, the feelings that people are going through, how are people dealing with it right now?
I think it also depends on, like I said, your own coping mechanisms. It depends on the nature of the existing marriage. It depends on the support structures around, right? Mm-hmm. So I think when it comes to one of the key feelings or thoughts, especially maybe for a first wife, is the acceptance part. And the acceptance comes with the need to understand why the husband made a decision like that. And usually a first wife tends to feel very inadequate, or like she's failed, or she's not good enough, or almost like she's being replaced and all of that. So there's a lot of emotion. And the self-esteem may be affected in the same way. That's not to say that a second wife doesn't have her own concerns. Mm-hmm. She may be, depending on the strength of the first marriage and how involved or to what extent the husband participates and how small his children are or his role, and maybe he's anchored or grounded in the first marriage to such an extent that maybe time is not received as much as she would like. And so there's lots of things that we could go into detail, and that is why I say, you know, we need to be exploring the different interventions so that we can unpack those that are specific to each relationship and each decision. So, you know, it emotionally it's very, very difficult. Lots of women also become so consumed in what he's doing with the other wife, where are they going, are they happy, is this marriage going to last, how long is it going to go for, when is it going to stop, and then obviously it causes a lot of instability and rattling as such, because again, it depends on what led to it. Was the marriage unstable at the time? Whether the husband disclosed or she found out somehow, whether he was having a relationship with her before, or whether was there trust in the relationship where he could come and tell her. So, you know, there's so many things that we can look at, the level of trust, the level of communication in that relationship. How was it introduced? Was it done under hostile circumstances? There are relationships, I must say, alhamdulillah, there are women over the years that I've seen have opened themselves up to the idea of their husband taking on second wives, or have accepted it, or have supported it to some extent. But that's not to say that it takes away the emotion or the difficulty that they have with it.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a question that has come in. It's with regard to the position of, you know, they say, what is the position of second wives with regards inheritance or in the event of divorce? Are Muslim marriages legally, you know, registered or accepted for that matter? You know, are our nikahs then accepted? Because, and even the other, you know, if you go the legal way and you have a marriage taking place that way, I don't know if you'll be able to answer that.
Okay, I'll be honest with you, Zinat, I would prefer not answering that because I'm not an Islamic scholar.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe if it's a need of the listeners, then perhaps we could get maybe one of the alims or even alimas, maybe from the Jamiat or something, we can have a follow-up. And then when it comes to Sharia-related questions as far as inheritance and divorce, we can make that a separate topic going forward.
Mm. It does seem to be a bit of a problem because I don't know if...
Islamically, when we know that you're supposed to treat each wife equally, so the same things would apply. The details, obviously, when it comes to inheritance and the breaking down and the working off shares and all of that, that I won't be able to answer that for you directly. And like I said, I wouldn't want to tell you something that I'm not the expert on. So I would rather then say, let's make that a clear intention to get someone. I will even follow up on that for the interest of the listeners, and even like so in a support group, we would also get maybe as a guest speaker for the support group, an alim or an Islamic scholar to come and address the ladies on the topic, right?
Yeah.
So we can look at that definitely.
Okay, that's important though, and I think it would be something that you need to look at. So what you're actually saying, that it is important for some kind of intervention to take place if, even before the second marriage take place,
yes.
That would be a better option, I believe.
As you know, also Zinat, you know, we've promoted the premarital interventions even to people who are not married, even their first marriage as well. So it's even more important, I think, we make it standard practice for any marriage, whether it's your first or your second or your third, for that matter, that you undertake some kind of premarital, because we all learn, we all grow from our experiences, and how can we use that? And it's a preventative measure to say that no one's looking at, like even when we do premarital counseling, and I know young people especially, when we talk about premarital, they don't even want to hear about dissolution of marriage, and understandably so, they're in a happy space, and who wants to think about divorce or talaq at the time of a marriage. But the reality is that as young people, or even you know, you're never too old to learn. No matter how old you are, it's important for us to learn and get knowledge about Islamic law, how it works, how my actions affect. We may be living in ignorance and we don't realize. It's not about knowing your rights only. There's rights and there's responsibilities and there's roles. It's also about relationships and trying to nurture those relationships. And in order to do that, it's important to get educated. If we stay ignorant, we're not going to be able to even protect ourselves also, or to set the boundaries that we need to. So education is very important. That's all we're trying to say, is that there are services available out there. The thing is, we need to access them and use them.
Yes, okay. So just very quickly, we've just come to the end of the program. How does one actually join the support group?
Okay, I think the first step, and again, support groups, so confidentiality, something that I want to mention, right? So we still have an ethical responsibility. I know people are a bit wary when it comes to support groups. If it's a K-9 project, then we will run it from our offices, and facilitators will get supervision. And because it's of a sensitive nature, usually support groups are of a sensitive nature, we don't want to run it like a workshop. So I want to try and keep the support groups in a very, very small, manageable size. And if you are interested, please, you can call the care line at 011-373-8080, and you can ask for me, and then I will explain it to you. You can ask me whatever questions you might have, and if you are interested, I will take your name down, and as soon as we work out logistics, I'll also need to inquire about your availability. So let's say, for example, someone phones me, I'll need to check with them what kind of what's the availability like, so that when we do set times and dates and all of that, we can take into consideration some of the callers' needs and when is it that they can make it, and then we can proceed from there.
JazakAllah khair, Sister Nisa, for sharing all that information with us. We certainly do appreciate it, and inshallah we will get back to you. We will be talking to you a little, early December, if I'm not mistaken, inshallah. Thank you so much.
JazakAllah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.